The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
How big money is challenging the constitutionality of the National Labor Relations Board and what the General Counsel is now saying. Today on the show, the president of the Building and Construction Trades Council of Greater New York and the latest from the North Shore Federation of Labor. Welcome to the Thursday, April 11th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with the president of the Building and Construction Trades Council of Greater New York, and that would be Gary LaBarbera. Website is nycbuildingtrades.org. And I'll tell you, Gary has one very impressive background. He has served since 2009 as president of the Building and Construction Trades Council of Greater New York, which, by the way, is an organization comprising local affiliates of 15 national and international unions. And they represent 100,000 working men and women in New York City. Now, back in 2021, Gary was elected president of the New York State Building and Construction Trades Council, which, by the way, is comprised of 15 local building trades councils, 12 district councils, and state associations, and 135 local unions, and they represent 200,000 tradespeople across the entire state. And since he got his position as president, Gary has embarked on ambitious negotiations for project labor agreements to provide labor cost savings to advance major public as well as private projects at risk of stalling due to the economic recession that, well, many times we have gone through that and the trades really, really get affected. Well, let me tell you this, because of his efforts, these efforts have resulted in excess of $100 billion in public sector project labor agreements with the City of New York and the New York City School Construction Authority, saving taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars. And this includes a landmark PLA with the New York City Housing Authority that is providing men and women across the five boroughs with a plan to middle-class careers in the building trades through their pre-apprenticeship and apprenticeship programs, as well as a monumental PLA with the City of New York that connects individuals from low-income neighborhoods to union, pre-apprenticeship, and direct entry programs. And all this has led to an estimated $1 billion in wages and benefits for target communities during the first year of the program. $1 billion in just the first year. Well, there is more good news, and that was announced a couple of weeks ago. Empire Wind and the Building and Construction Trades Council of Greater New York announced the signing of a PLA for the construction of the South Brooklyn Marine Terminal. Now, this project will play a key role in Equinor's development of the Empire Wind offshore wind project. It's the first of its kind PLA for the company, and it's a true commitment to the trades, and we're talking at least 1,000 union construction jobs and apprenticeships in local New York communities. Just fantastic. Just fantastic. In fact, Gary is quoted as saying the creation of offshore wind not only propels New York toward its climate goals, but also represents an opportunity to create thousands of good-paying union careers, bolster our middle class, and provide local communities with much-needed economic stimulus. I'll tell you, they know how to do it in New York, especially New York City. And Gary is going to talk all about it as our first guest. Later in the show, we're going to check in with Len DeCosimo. Len is president and executive secretary of the North Shore Federation of Labor. He is also president of his union. That's the Musicians Union, Local 4. And a couple things he's going to talk about is gerrymandering, and that is the ballot initiative that's actually they're working on right now, gathering signatures. Citizens, not politicians, to end gerrymandering in the state of Ohio. Now, the state of Ohio, and we've talked about this many times on the show, there's been several efforts, one in 2015 and then one 3 years later to stop gerrymandering, but it just wasn't good enough. In this case, you're not dealing with politicians. You got five Democrats, five Republicans, five independents. And if you even served elected office anytime, I mean, 20, 30, 40 years ago, you're not allowed on this commission. No, no politicians. So we'll get into that. Also, Len was nominated to the Cuyahoga Arts and Culture Board of Trustees. We'll talk about that and also their labor program for the general election come November. So Len DeCosimo will be buttoning up the show right here on America's Workforce. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. The General Counsel of the National Labor Relations Board took a swipe yesterday at SpaceX, Trader Joe's, and Amazon for challenging her agency's constitutionality. Let me explain. Jennifer Abruzzo, the appointee of President Biden, described such companies as deep pocket, low road employers that were trying to throw the agency off its mission of protecting workers' rights because they have the money to do so. And we're talking a whole lot of money here. This is what Jennifer said. It seems to me they would rather spend their money initiating court litigation rather than improving their workers' lives and their own workplace operations. So their primary goal, in my mind, is to divert our scarce resources away from protecting workers' rights to organize and to fight for recognition and respect for the value that they add to their employers' operations. And you know what? That is not going to happen, at least not on her watch. She added that the employers were trying to, quote, divert attention away from the fact that they are lawbreakers who need to be held accountable in a timely manner, end of quote. Abruzzo's remarks, delivered as part of a panel put on by the Roosevelt Institute think tank, appeared to be her first public comments regarding the legal effort to undermine her agency, which has been a punching bag for Republican lawmakers and anti-union forces for many, many years. I mean, we've had many conversations with Bill Samuel, government affairs director of the AFL-CIO, on the history of beating up the National Labor Relations Board, which, by the way, oversees private sector union elections and investigates unfair labor practices committed by employers as well as unions. It has a prosecutorial arm, which Jennifer Abruzzo runs, as well as a separate five-member board that interprets the law and rules on cases. Now, this agency, mind you, goes back to 1935. That's when it was created to promote collective bargaining and foster labor peace. Well, Abruzzo's office alleges that SpaceX, the company owned by Elon Musk, illegally fired eight workers who had openly criticized the company's culture and Musk. SpaceX responded by bringing a case in federal court arguing that the board structure is unconstitutional and therefore the agency's charges against it are illegitimate. Now, if SpaceX succeeds in its challenge, the case could disrupt a collective bargaining system that has been in place since the New Deal. Abruzzo ripped SpaceX and other companies for challenging the agency's constitutionality. This is what she said. Let's keep in mind these esoteric legal arguments came about. Why? Because we dared to issue a complaint against SpaceX after it unlawfully fired eight workers. In the meantime, Trader Joe's and Amazon, both of which have been fighting their employees' unions campaigns, recently laid out essentially the same argument as SpaceX in legal proceedings at the labor board. And the general counsel has accused both of those companies of retaliating against workers to snuff out organizing efforts. And she says companies like Trader Joe's and Amazon were jumping on the bandwagon created by SpaceX. She went on to say others got into the action just because we're trying to hold them accountable for repeatedly violating workers' rights to organize and collectively bargain. She added that she recently spoke to a group of labor attorneys and offered them some advice. And that advice is, just because you could make challenges and arguments does not mean that you should. I'll tell you, she's a tough one. She is a tough one, and she is calling them out. We'll see what happens. We'll definitely see what. In fact, John Nichols, who is one of the great writers of The Nation magazine, and if you Google The Nation magazine and John Nichols, you might come across that article. We're going to feature him on this story in the not-too-distant future here on America's Workforce. And speaking of Trader Joe's, which was mentioned in that article, the NLRB has accused the company of unfair labor practices at a California store ahead of last year's union election. The board alleges a manager, this was at the Oakland store, interrogated workers about the union, threatened store closures and hour reductions if the workers supported the union. The manager allegedly called employees who supported the union a gang. The board's complaint is the latest chapter in its dispute with the grocery chain. It is also alleged that Trader Joe's made illegal threats ahead of a Kentucky union vote and illegally fired a worker at a store in Massachusetts. Trader Joe's has responded by, again, challenging the constitutionality of the NLRB. Amazing what's going on here. It's never easy, no doubt about that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the president of the New York City Building Trades. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at USW.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com to learn more.
This segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit bmwe.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield's National Labor Office. Blue Cross and Blue Shield companies formed out of a need to provide affordable health care to teachers, loggers, and miners. And in 1965, the Blues developed the National Labor Office to strengthen its commitment to organized labor. And today, Blue Cross and Blue Shield's National Labor Office remains focused on America's workers, advocating for affordable and equitable health care, partnering with strategic alliances to provide industry-leading products and services, and proudly serving more than 18 million unionized workers, retirees, and their families, working hard for America's working families and for the health of America. You can learn more by following them at Blue Labor on LinkedIn and X, formerly known as Twitter. All right, let's go to New York City right now. Welcome a newcomer to the show. His name is Gary LaBarbera. Really impressed with his background. He is president right now of the Building and Construction Trades Council of Greater New York. Big announcement a couple of weeks ago about a project labor agreement that we're going to talk about. But Gary, welcome to the show. I read a lot. I can do probably a half hour just on your background in the trades and what you have done to grow Greater New York with project labor agreements. One thing I failed to mention, so you started out as a Teamster. We should do a shout out here with Local 282. If you don't mind, is that, and I guess that local was involved in construction, and maybe that's how you found your path to the building trades. Can you run that by me? And why did you go that path? Did you come from a union family? I would imagine you did, especially in New York City.
Yes, I did. So, it's nice to be on, and thanks for having me. A little bit about my background. You hit it on the head. My father was a Teamster. He actually joined the Teamsters Union in 1948. After, returning from World War II, found his way into a Teamsters Union. And so, obviously, union household, I found my way into Local 282 of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, which is a construction local, part of the construction division of the Teamsters Union. And the Teamsters International Union and local unions are affiliated both nationally and locally with all the building trades councils. During my time at 282, I ascended to the position of president of that local. I served 14 years and as principal officer there. And while in the Teamsters, was also the president, became the president of Teamsters Joint Council 16, which is in New York City, which represented at the time 51 local unions, 120,000 Teamsters in New York City. Simultaneously with those two positions, I also served as the president of the New York City Central Labor Council, representing over 400 unions and 1.4 million members in New York City. After doing those three jobs for a number of years, I was asked by my predecessor, Ed Malloy, if he was retiring, and he said, would you ever consider taking over the building trades here in Greater New York? And at the time, it made a lot of sense to me to do that. And so I did that, and I've been serving in this position for 15 years, and was also served concurrently as the president of New York State Building and Construction Trades Council. So we represent about 235,000 unionized construction workers here in the state and city of New York. And so that's a little bit about my history. I've been in union leadership just a little over 30 years. And, this has been my calling, and completely dedicated myself to advancing the interests of working men and women, in particular in the construction industry.
I think we could safely say that Gary LaBarbera wears many hats, and they're all hard hats. I think that is the best way to explain your background.
Fair enough.
Well, we're definitely a big proponent here of project labor agreements, and it seems like you have done amazing work in New York City. Let's plow into this big announcement a couple of weeks ago dealing with wind power and how you were able to more or less construct this deal. And it sounds, I'm looking here just on the surface, like 1,000 jobs right off the bat. Talk to me about that whole process, Gary. How did it happen?
Yeah, so I'm happy to share. So I will tell you, about 4 or 5 years ago, when we realized that renewables was going to be a big priority in the state and the city of New York, and nationally for that matter, I felt it was necessary to really kind of get ahead of the work that was coming. So actually through a lot of effort with the state of New York and lobbying, we were actually able, after a couple of years of the conversations with the governor at the time and the legislature, to actually create, and we were the first state in the country to codify into statute, a law that would require that in offshore wind, onshore wind, solar, that there would be prevailing wage mandate. Again, this is codified statute and PLA requirements. So that was the foundation of, you know, why everything in New York in terms of the offshore wind and renewable is under project labor agreements. But just to back up a little bit on project labor agreements, basically every agency in New York City has what we call programmatic PLAs. I was able to accomplish that in 2009 with Mayor Bloomberg. And so there are 13 mayoral agencies. We also have project labor agreements with New York City Housing Authority, New York Health and Hospitals Corporation, the Dormitory Authority, State of New York. I mean, just basically every public procurement agency in the city, we have project labor agreements, which we call programmatic project labor agreements. So, for example, the last project labor agreement I negotiated with the city encompassed $40 billion worth of construction over a four-year period. Construction market in New York City is generally around $70 to $80 billion annually, with a good portion of this being public sector work. So really locked up in New York City all of this type of work under these project labor agreements. So that's a little bit of the history of how we got to where we are with the offshore wind and onshore wind. And not only is just the offshore wind and onshore wind and solar, it's the ports. And so there was a requirement as part of the RFP for Equinor to actually come in and negotiate a project labor agreement. And that's what we did. And it was a long negotiation, I will say. I mean, somewhat complicated because it's really kind of a new, it's the offshore wind industry in New York is, you know, certainly new. And so it was a long negotiations, but the negotiations were, I would have to say, you know, very, very reasonable, professional. There was no, you know, there was really no combative nature of the negotiations. But, you know, complicated, kind of a new and emerging industry for us in New York City. So we negotiated, again, for about 10 months. We came up with what we think is a terrific project labor agreement for the port. And, again, the same for the offshore wind. The offshore wind project labor agreements are actually done now through NABTU, which is the North America's Building Trades Unions, so that they are kind of standardized. And then not each local union is doing something, or local council is doing something different. So that they're working on the offshore wind piece. But before you can actually start to erect towers, you got to have a port to build them. So that's what the announcement was a couple of weeks ago with Equinor is the port project labor agreement. This is the South Brooklyn Marine Terminal, as it's known. And we're looking forward to getting started on construction. Very good construction manager there, Skanska Construction. So long history with Skanska in New York. Great working relationship. So we expect the project will be a very efficient project. Of course, our first priority is always safety. We really prioritize safety. And so, you know, we're looking forward to building a project that's efficient, effective, productive. And certainly all the workers go to work every day, and the members, they go home safely.
Yeah,
absolutely. So that's
absolutely
a little bit of the story on SBMT, as we call it.
Okay, let's get some specifics here. How soon will this start? I mentioned at least 1,000 union construction jobs. How long will it go? And I also want to get into some of the details of that agreement about minorities, women-owned businesses, even vets. But let's start with the timetable. Can you give us a little glimpse of that?
Yeah, so construction should start in earnest in a couple of months. And the project itself will probably take about 2 years to build out completely. Now, if you want me to jump right into, you know, MWBEs and workforce development, I'm happy to.
Sure. Get into it. Go ahead.
Yeah. So look, one of the things that we've prioritized in New York City in particular is workforce development, right? And really, frankly, serving underserved and marginalized communities. And when I mentioned the last project labor agreement that I negotiated with the city of New York, we actually did something quite historic by focusing on our workforce development. We focused on certain zip codes or communities in New York City, right? And we said, look, we want to try to create where there's 30% of hours are dedicated to either members that live in these zip codes, or we recruit from members that live in, or future members to come into our apprentice programs and pre-apprentice direct entry programs from certain communities, right? And so when I was negotiating this contract with the city, I said, you know, first of all, we have to have a benchmark. And so we said, well, what's the benchmark? So I said, you know, why don't we use 15% or more of the population in the community is living under the federal poverty line. So 15% or more. So that's 85% of the people are under the federal poverty line. They said that seems very reasonable, and that I think is a standard definition for a marginalized or disadvantaged community. Okay. So then I said to them, look, just to get a scope of things so I understand what we're talking about here, is it possible for the city to provide me a map of how many communities in the five boroughs would fall into that category? Shockingly, they were able to do that, but shockingly, almost 60% of communities in the five boroughs of New York fell into that category of poverty. So when you do hear the stories of New York City about the tale of two cities, there is some reality there. You have tremendous wealth in New York City, but you also have significant poverty in many, many underserved communities. So that's what the labor movement does, right? What we do is we find ways to lift people out of poverty and bring them into the middle class and create careers, family-sustaining careers for them. So what we did is we really focused on that in this project labor agreement. We also, you know, support our MWBEs. We want to minority contractors. We want to really, you know, develop contractors that will come into the union trades and sign union contracts. So this particular project labor agreement addresses both those issues with workforce development. Now, on the workforce development piece, we are very, very proud in New York City to have, I think we're the first council in the country to form what we call the Apprentice Readiness Collective, also known as ARC. And we have four pre-apprentice and direct entry programs in New York City that we are affiliated with the Building Trades Council. The first is a program known as Construction Skills, and this is where we focus on. This has been a very successful program in existence for over 20 years. And this program, we focus primarily on high school students, while we do have an adult program primarily focused on high school students. Then our next program that very proud of, which, and I'm the president of that organization I just mentioned. The next one we work with, and I'm very, very proud of, is I founded it about 10 years ago, is New York Helmets for Hard Hats, which is affiliated with the national program, but this is a New York State program specifically. I serve as the chairman of this program. And this program is solely focused on returning veterans and placing them direct entry into the trades. And that is our veterans program, New York Helmets to Hard Hats. Then we have a program known as Non-Traditional Employment for Women, also known as NEW. Again, very successful program, and I think the name of the program kind of describes the program in and of itself, and that is Non-Traditional Employment for Women. And so this is a program that brings women into the trades. And again, a very successful program. And then finally, we have Pathways to Apprenticeship, which is a program that is focused primarily, not solely, but primarily on formerly justice-involved individuals. So those are the four programs. We focus on bringing women into the trades, high school students, formerly justice-involved individuals, and veterans. So we've been a very successful program. In fact, the collective retention rate of all these four programs, we know this because we created this coalition, as I mentioned earlier, the Apprentice Readiness Collective, is over 80%. So that's a pretty impressive numbers. And when we look at retention rates, we don't look at 60 or 90 days. where most workforce development organizations do. We looked at five-year periods. So those are very impressive numbers. We know that union apprentice programs are a pathway to the middle class, and we also know that our pre-apprentice and direct entry programs, certainly in New York City, are working and doing what they're supposed to do by reaching into communities, bringing people into pre-apprentice training, getting them connected into an apprentice program. And this way, these individuals now have an opportunity to have a pathway through a union career in construction and into the middle class.
You are making it happen in New York City. I tell you, I love the story. Gary LaBarbera joining us on our live line today. He serves as president of the Building and Construction Trades Council of Greater New York, talking about a major union partnership for New York's first offshore wind hub, creating at least 1,000 jobs. We'll continue with Gary later in the show. We're going to check in with Len DeCosmo on behalf of the North Shore Federation of Labor. Back in a few minutes. Don't go away.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis. And give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers, oh.aft.org is their website. Let's go back to New York City and rejoin Mr. Gary LaBarbera. You know he's from New York when he starts talking. No disrespect there. I love your accent. Keep it going, buddy. Okay, Yankees or Mets? I have to ask you that. Which are you?
Well, you know what? I tell you, it's such a hard choice. I would have to say Mets, though.
Mets? Okay. Okay. All right. Okay, let's get back into the conversation here, Gary. And we talked in the first segment about that major partnership, a union partnership, a project labor agreement for New York's first offshore wind hub. And that's going to get underway pretty soon here, again, creating about 1,000 construction jobs. And I just want to mention that the IBEW is a big player in this. Ed Hill Jr. will be joining us on the show Monday to talk about what the electrical workers will be doing on that project. But Gary, by the way,
has been the head of the New York Construction Trades Council, New York City, since 2009. And I'll tell you, he wears many hats, all hard hats, on a number of councils, including helmets to hard hats. I want to talk to you about, if you don't mind, you know, we're approaching Workers' Memorial Day coming up in a couple of weeks. I know you're all about safety, and you have to be, especially in the trades. I mean, it's dangerous. I mean, you're climbing all kind of ridiculous heights, especially in New York City with all the skyscrapers. And I understand that you did some work back, oh my God, it was in 2017. This was Local Law 196, which led to a significant decline in worksite injuries. Talk to me about that, Gary.
Sure. So, and thanks for bringing that up. I mentioned in my remarks earlier, you know, that one of the biggest priorities for building trades is safety. So first, let me just say, I mean, look, construction is one of the most dangerous industries in the United States, or frankly, in the world. Again, because of the heights, because of, you know, electrocution, there are just so many issues that can, you can get crushed. I mean, there's just so many issues. So as part of apprenticeship training programs, you know, beyond just the skill training, safety training is very important. But back in 2015 and 2016, prior to 2017, the passage of the law, I have to tell you, what we saw in New York City, in my opinion, was really an epidemic of fatalities on job sites. And so looking at the amount of these fatalities, and I'm talking about like 23, 24 fatalities a year, candidly, we realized that about 90% of these fatalities were on non-union jobs. And again, not surprising, frankly, because of the lack of training. And over 50% of these fatalities, but what I'm telling you is this is data from OSHA. This is not anecdotal. Over 50% of these fatalities were undocumented workers, and they were non-English speaking workers. So look, we in the building trades in New York City really believe strongly that each life is equal and each life matters. And so we took it upon ourselves, and I think this is an important and significant, very relevant point, that once again, it was organized labor that stood up for all working people. And we think about the history of our country and some of the things we take for granted today. For example, you know, the 40-hour work week or the 8-hour day and Social Security and many other things, which I won't go off into that tangent, but they all came from organized labor and the labor movement, right? I think we know that. And so in this case, again, organized labor, building trades, we said, you know what, we need to do something. We need to address what's going on. So we began to put together city council legislations that would say that every worker, regardless of union status in New York City, would be required to have a minimum of 40 hours safety training, and that you would have to attain through that training what is called today is an SST card, is a site safety training card. And it's complicated because of all the apprentice programs. You know, we created a whole curriculum that goes beyond the OSHA 10 and the OSHA 30. And so now our apprentice programs do the training for our members, but there are also independent training organizations that train non-union workers. But in order to get onto a job site and work on a construction site, you must have 40-hour safety training. But I will tell you, you know, it was a two-year battle once again, and it really required a couple of very dramatic moments. And so one of the most incredible moments was in January of 2018 when we had what we called our coffin rally. And, this actually made national news, was all over, national news. I was getting calls from members of Congress saying, you know, wow, that was something. So what we did was we had what we called the coffin rally. And we actually had at the time, there were 21 fatalities. The carpenters actually made 22 coffins, and we painted them black, and we got members of the building trades wear all black with black hard hats, and we put together 20,000 members on a snowy January, and we surrounded City Hall. I mean, this was really a moment that, you know, really I think about all the time. And at that rally, that was, I think, a pivotal moment because the city council was in session. And we demanded, quite frankly, that the city council pass legislation and that the mayor sign this legislation. And, I mean, ultimately, it did work. And, in fact, the city council's 51 members. The day of the vote on this bill, there were 42 members in chamber. And this was one of the very rare times, I have to say this, very rare time, that there was a unanimous vote for passage of this bill. 42 members, was 42-0. And I do also want to comment that, you know, you think he says, oh, well, you know, that's terrific, and why would anybody oppose that? We had significant opposition. We had opposition from the ABC. We had opposition from the AGC. We had opposition from non-union contracting groups such as those. We had opposition from at that time, the real estate community. So just to be clear, and I have to tell you that you would think that no one would oppose that, right? And life matters, but there was opposition where these non-union contractors, they want to put profits over people, and that doesn't just mean in terms of working conditions. It means means they don't care about the safety and the lives of workers. And so, you know, just how to mention that, really, every time I think about it, it angers me. But we did have opposition to this bill, believe it or not, and saying that it would increase the cost of construction because, you know, they'd have to pay for the training. We also wanted, by the way, that employees pay for the non-union training. We didn't want the workers to have to pay for themselves. So I do feel that was necessary to mention because, you know, your listeners may be thinking, well, that was, you know, that's great. Who would oppose that? Well, I'll tell you who would oppose that. That was the non-union contracting associations. That's who would oppose that. And they did. But again, we were able to push through this, and we were able to have a bill passed in the city council 42-0. And then shortly thereafter, the mayor signed into legislation. And so in 2017, Local Law 196 became into effect. And, you know, look, we still have fatalities, but not nearly as many, at least 50% less. And we know there are also less injuries as well, not just fatalities because of the safety training. But again, the nature of business is very, very dangerous. And again, the numbers are still the same. I think this year every year we've had a memorial mass at St. Patrick's Cathedral. I believe this year we had 12 fatalities, and I think 10 of them were non-union and 2 were union fatalities. So again, it's about 90% of these fatalities are still in the union sector. Again, one fatality is too many as far as we're concerned, but unfortunately, it does happen. So that's what we did, and you know, we're very proud of that. We know that again, in 2015, 2016, we had 24, 25 fatalities a year. We know that's about 50% less now. And we certainly know that injuries are much lower than they were as well.
Well, this is just another example of how unions lift all boats, whether you're in a union or non-union. What unions do help all workers in America. Perfect example of that. And thank you so much for sharing that story. Gary LaBarbera. On our live line today, our featured guest, he is president of the Building and Construction Trades Council of Greater New York. The website, nycbuildingtrades.org, nycbuildingtrades.org. Please stay in touch with us. I'm congratulating you on that major project labor agreement with Empire Wind, and we're talking about at least 1,000 union construction jobs off of New York City in the port area. Good stuff there. You stay safe. Keep in touch, okay, brother?
Thanks so much, brother. I really appreciate you giving me the time to be on today.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Len DeCosimo is the president and executive secretary of the North Shore AFL-CIO Federation of Labor, and he's coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Are you an experienced mechanical insulator looking to take your career to the next level? Insulators Local 50 in Central Ohio has steady work for a number of years. Insulators Local 50 offers a total wage and benefits package that can't be beat. It's not just the competitive wages. Local 50 also provides medical, vision, and dental insurance with no paycheck deductions for you and your family. Don't miss out on the chance to secure your future. Join us at Insulators Local 50. Earn great pay and the best benefits. Visit insulators50.com/AWF50 to fill out the online form, and a Local 50 representative will call to begin the process. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org. America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, ulagency.org. I had the opportunity to MC many events. We call it the Unsung Heroes event, which is usually every November. And in fact, our next guest, Mr. Len DeCosimo, provided the entertainment for that. I would assume you'll be... also providing the entertainment for the one later this year, Mr. DeCosimo, on behalf of Musicians Local 4. Is that the case?
That is the case. We're happy to do it. And frankly, Flash, you're my unsung hero today.
Aw. So... I'm trying, buddy. I'm trying to get the workers' voice out there. Yeah, yeah. You know what? It's hard to believe. This July will be 26 years that I've been the host of America's Workforce. And last year, and I've said this so many times, I don't know if I said it to you, but we exploded last year. We got in the top 1% of all podcasts. And we haven't been podcasting very long. Actually, we started that in the pandemic, which was like May, June of 2020. And I'll tell you, a lot of great sponsors. A lot of file sharing, so we appreciate all those who have come to the table for America's Workforce, including you, Mr. DeCosimo. Let's start right there because we have a very politically charged year, and congratulations on that nomination to the Arts and Culture Board. We'll get into that. But again, politics, and we got some, signature gathering here. Talk to me about what the North Shore Federation of Labor is doing, Len.
This is the Ohio Citizens Redistricting Commission Amendment. Citizens Not Politicians is the organization that we're working with that's working across the state to end gerrymandering. What we're looking for is to create a 15-member redistricting committee that bans current politicians, bans former politicians, bans political party officials, bans lobbyists, and creates a 15-member, again, committee, bipartisan. What this commission will do is redraw the district boundaries that should have been drawn constitutionally after the 2020 census. If we all remember, just a few years back, it was during the plague, but there were two congressional and five state house maps that were ruled unconstitutional by the Ohio Supreme Court. And so this petition drive, this signature gathering drive, has to collect over 400,000 signatures in 44 of 88 counties to be able to put this on the ballot this November.
How are we doing collecting signatures? I know there was a number of people out just a couple of weeks ago during the March primary,
But I know you got your finger on the pulse here. How do we look right now, Lynn?
Well, we're looking good. You know, the state AFL-CIO is working through all of the central labor councils for this because there's so many counties to attach. Our goal here at the North Shore is to get 2% of the total amount, which is about 7,300 signatures. We're doing remarkably well considering that it wasn't until late November that we were approved by the Ohio Ballot Board to begin collecting signatures. We have a July 3rd deadline. We've been doing drive-through petition signature parties. We had one last week in Garfield Heights. We're setting up two more in Middleburg Heights and Maple Heights next week. And we have a May 4th signature canvas in Ward 17 of Cleveland. We like that ward a lot. Everybody should, because it's the higher voter turnout in recent elections. And that's good. Also because there's a lot of union households there. And we know from polling and data that we do, that union households and their members are 12 to 15% higher in voter turnout to vote in every election, primaries as well as general.
Well, what are you hearing about the November right now? I know there's a lot of people saying, you know what, I want better choices, but I mean, the choices are pretty clear. It's not official yet, but we kind of know what's going to happen here. What are people saying, especially at the North Shore Federation of Labor right now?
Well, what we're looking at primarily is looking at the issues that the politicians support and what they're behind. It's remarkable, Flash, that issues are an easier sell than an individual candidate. We've seen it election cycle after election cycle. And if you look at the current administration in the White House, they've done so many things, and including bringing federal dollars on so many projects to Northeast Ohio and to the Great Lakes region. You know, if the listeners want to, they can go to NorthShoreAFLCIO.org. We have a whole revamped website. There's legislation, of summary of bills in the State House that also have our position for working people. There's many ways you can get involved, including collecting signatures, being a part of our canvassing, being a part of phone banking. But it's remarkable that writing postcards to union households has had a very good response from us. So you can get involved with that. You can receive texts and email updates, and check out our endorsed candidates and issues.
All right, that website is NorthShoreAFLCIO.org, NorthShoreAFLCIO.org. Okay, about a minute and a half left here, and congratulations on your nomination to the Cuyahoga Arts and Culture Board of Trustees. My question to you, what does this mean? I mean, as far as collective bargaining, anything there?
Well, what's interesting about Cuyahoga Arts and Culture is not only the millions of dollars that it generates for arts and culture in town, it also supports collective bargaining in those major venues when these organizations apply for operating expense. For example, you think of the American Federation of Musicians, Actors Equity Association, SSDNC, which is Stage Directors and Choreographers, AFTRA. When you think of Playhouse Square, Severance Hall, but you also need to think of IATSE, the stagehands that are supported by these grants, the box office union, the service employees who are the janitors and security, the United Food and Commercial Workers who work in the kitchens there. All of them are supported through operating grants that come through Cuyahoga Arts and Culture by the venues that apply for those grants. There's been over $250 million, Flash, that has been granted from this dedicated tax since 2007. Every 10 years, it expires in 2027. We want to put it on the ballot this fall so that we have a fighting chance to be able to pass it and continue and increase the funding that goes to all of these fine organizations and subsequently the workers that work there.
I like that. Okay, Lynn, I appreciate the answer on that one. Lynn DeCosimo, President and Executive Secretary. I knew I was going to get a good one from you. North Shore Federation of Labor. Do check out that website, NorthShoreAFLCIO.org. You stay safe and stay in touch, okay, brother?
I appreciate you, Flash.
All right, that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, getting railroaded in the rail industry. And labor lawyer Andrew Strom will be joining us. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.